When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codename Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. It's the top of the week, which means it is time for our strange news segment. There's some scandal at the post office, and don't worry, folks, this is not the U.S. Post Office for the first time in a long time. That's the subject of scandal. TikTok is in what may be a little bit of hot water, and there may be a new Heaven's Gate on the rise. This story in particular about a group called Love as One, this stood out to me because I know we've got a lot of folks in the crowd who, like me, kind of monitor cults before they hit the news in a big way, before something terrible happens to them. Would you guys be okay with starting with that story today?
Absolutely.
Yes, I'm always looking for a new group to join. I love making friends, and I look forward to learning about this one, Ben.
We had a great thing going with that earlier cult. I want to thank you again for being the messianic figurehead there, Matt. I think we made a lot of progress in the space of a 7-minute video.
You know what? Matt, speed to you, sir.
And Matt, speed to you, my friend. So everybody probably is at least a little bit familiar with the tragic story of the Heaven's Gate cult. Back in 1974, they were founded as a new religious movement with a lot of UFO ideation. And this was a cult that had this ending point. They believed that after the Hale-Bopp comet zinged past Earth, there would be a number of spacecraft coming to retrieve the faithful. This unfortunately led to a mass suicide as members of the movement took their own lives in an effort to join those extraterrestrial craft that they thought they would meet them in an immaterial or different form. That occurred in October of 1996. Stories like these are unfortunately not unique. in the world of new religious movements, which if you're ever talking to someone that you think is in a cult, new religious movement is more like, is the more diplomatic way to describe their organization. Because as we know, as we've learned from correspondence over the year, in fact, a lot of people don't like the C word. They might even dislike it more than the other C word that we refer to here in the U.S.
Conspiracy theory?
No, that would be CT.
I really thought you guys were going a different way with that.
Yeah. CT is a common abbreviation, though, for conspiracy theory, if you're ever reading something confusing on a forum.
But they both accomplish the same thing. Like a cult is a term that is used to kind of neg whatever comes after it. Like if you're referring to someone's belief system as a cult, then you are inherently judging it and applying certain criteria to it that are inherently negative. In the same way as a conspiracy theory is used in that way.
Yeah, in the modern parlance, those could both qualify as what are known as thought-terminating cliches. Our story for, I found this when I was reading some local papers in the Pacific Northwest for a different thing. But our story begins with a report from the Mount Shasta News. This is a local paper in the area. And they had a headline that really caught me. It said, spiritual group compared to Heaven's Gate cult is planting roots in the Mount Shasta area. This came out today as we record, but the group itself was familiar to me from some other reading. They have a really interesting name. They're called Love Has Won. It's odd to choose that past tense for the name of a new religious movement, but it happens. Points for creativity. It is led by a person named Amy Carlson. If you are familiar with the cult, you might not know her as Amy Carlson because she is referred to as Mother God by her followers and her lover or her partner, whomever it may be at the time, is also automatically referred to as Father God. So at this time, Mother God, Amy Carlson, to everyone outside of the movement, is about 44 years old. Here's what the followers believe. They believe that she has been reincarnated hundreds and hundreds of times. They also believe that she has been in contact with Robin Williams since he passed away in 2014. That's just one of the beliefs that outsiders will point to as the more bizarre part of the story. Specifically, the mission of this religious movement is to follow Carlson because one day she will lead 144,000 chosen people into a new mystical fifth dimension. She has also said that former U.S. President Donald Trump was her father in a past life. They had a great relationship, in case anyone is concerned. There's something that happens a lot with these kinds of movements, which is there's a growing discrepancy between the narrative offered by the former members of the organization and the narrative offered by the spokespeople of the group. This is something we're familiar with anytime you talk about movements that are, you know, that have this level of controversy. Scientology is, of course, the easiest example, but I promise you there are numerous examples out there. Mother God claims that she has been trying to save humanity for 19 billion years, which is interesting because what we know of current science shows us that humans were probably not around 19 billion years ago. You can see an episode of Vice about them. It's the first episode of a series called False Gods. And you can see the allegations of mistreatment and abuse in this religious movement. So far, I haven't been able to find anything that's as egregious as some of the other things that we know cult movements do. Like, I haven't found any fatalities. I haven't found extreme injuries, but I have seeing videos of Carlson that show her verbally abusing people, screaming at her followers, abusing animals, having children locked in the closets for being kids. You know, that's one thing that a lot of cult-like movements do is they punish people through their children.
it's enormously effective because that's one of the closest relationships a human being has. There have also been allegations that members are underfed, they're never paid for their work, they're never allowed to sit down. And although the movement itself, like if you hear what the spokespeople say, the movement itself is maybe a little bit more on the hippie side, but in general, they seem like really nice people who just happen to believe something different. But everything the survivors of the cult are describing is troublingly close to the guidelines we made in our earlier video about how to make a cult. They're brainwashing people. They're regimented. Their free time is gone. Relationships are broke down. We also see that some cures have been promised to people. And these cures are things like you can talk to Mother God on the phone, and through that phone conversation, she can cure cancer. We also see a little bit of a Hubbard-esque thing here, because Hubbard would not allow, you know, drug and alcohol abuse, but he didn't practice what he preached.
Mm-hmm. Oh, can I take a tangent really quickly and get right back to here?
Please do.
Absolutely.
Okay. We had a listener voicemail that I just heard. I went through a couple of them today, and someone left a message asking us if we knew anything about a bet L. Ron Hubbard made with some other person at a bar about whether or not he could begin a religious movement that would function as a tax haven and bring him great wealth.
It's a little on the nose, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, I had not heard, you know, I've not seen any evidence of that. I think if there were evidence of that that was, you know, blatant or just out there in the public sphere, then that would be a big issue, or it would be just completely, you know, denied and pushed away. But anyway, just putting that out there.
I've heard that. I've heard a couple of versions of that anecdote, enough to convince me that at least several times in conversation, he had made statements about, you know, why, about how the real money was in not writing fiction, but in starting a religion, right, for the tax purposes and other side benefits of being a religious figure that we've named earlier. So we know we talked about in conversation. As far as a specific bet, I am not aware. I haven't found proof of that, but I've heard that story before. I haven't found a good source for that yet, but maybe it could have happened.
It does seem a little, you know, very much in his character, being kind of a blustery, braggadocious figure, right? I could see him like say, hey, look what I'm going to do. Or no, to your point, Ben, just kind of bragging about how this is a brilliant idea that no one else has thought of. And to be fair, I mean, he pulled it off in a much more outlandish form than just about any other figure of his type has in recent time.
So we see some parallels in Scientology, in the world of Scientology, and L. Ron Hubbard in specific. But again, we see a lot of parallels in these types, this genre of religious movement in general. You know, when it comes down to the psychological aspects of most new religious movements, they're not very different at all. You know, there's a Mad Lib mythology, right, where you can slot in one thing, slot out another. But when it comes to how people are treated, it's often going to be the same negation tactics. You want to diminish people. You want to make them feel less than, and that you're their only hope. And you want to find like little things that you can use to like try to make them feel as though they are somehow inferior. And the sad part about these sorts of approaches is, unless someone is expecting them, if they make the mistake of trusting you, then they can be effective. And this goes into another commonality that we should probably talk about a little bit. Like Heaven's Gate comparisons, those are a good headline grabber, but they lead us into, I would argue, a conversation about language. Language is another wall you put up around a group to isolate them. And Matt, this is something that stuck out to you as well, right?
Yeah, the language of groups, I think, is something that I end up harping on a lot of the time, and I'm sorry to do so to everybody who's getting tired of this conversation.
No, we've been having
iterations.
I love this. I know I'm not the audience member here, but you are speaking my language. Get it?
Oh, okay. So if you go to lovehaswon.org, which is this organization's website, you can see a lot of stuff here about mom herself. It even says about mom in one tab. There's another tab that you can click on that says 5D updates. And if you go here, you can read, you can see what I'm talking about. This is just some of the language that's used on the website. And specifically, I'm talking about the phrasing here, stuff that is maybe insular to the group, as well as what appears to be urgent messages that have consequences. So failure to take action feels like it has a consequence. So let's just talk about this. Okay, so here we go. It says, planet Earth equals heart is ascending. We are finishing, as you said, Ben, a 19 billion year mission. But notice this, they are finishing a 19 billion year mission. Mm-hmm. Are you getting the codes? I'm not getting the codes, guys. I don't know about y'all. So far, I haven't gotten them. It says, do you read the daily updates that will allow you to prep a bit more for what's coming?
Hmm. That sounds a lot like the contract that you enter into when you become a Scientologist. Isn't it a billion-year contract or something like that?
Yeah, but this is up in the game to 19, or at least it's been happening already. Well,
but I love that it's a mission instead of a contract. I think that's interesting.
So obviously the code is up, up, down, down, left, right, BA. I think we can all agree on that one.
Don't forget start, Ben.
So the interesting distinction here, I would say, is that this is what's drawing the Heaven's Gate comparison, that by their own official statements, they are at the end of the mission. What does the end of the mission mean? Is this in some way baking in its own finishing line? And if so, what happens when you cross that finishing line? It's dangerous because, and there are, you know, there are places like Cult Watch and nonprofits that try to keep an eye on these things. But the issue is that when you join an organization like this, you are brought in through a series of very well thought out strategies, you know, like the infamous love bomb where people tell you that you're the greatest and then you start getting support that maybe you never had in your pre-cult life. And then you start, the cracks begin to show, right? You see that there is a careening abuse problem here. Apparently there are multiple reports of abusive behavior and drinking. And another thing that has some observers worried about this possibly going sideways is that Carlson's health is in decline. Authorities don't know her location either. So she's kind of going off the grid. And when you have a messianic figure like this, when they decide that their life is ending, sometimes their teachings change in a way that isn't always great. Or when they decide their organization is ending, these change in a way that isn't always great for the followers. Right now, this is very small. I think they have 20-something full-time members. So this is a very close, insular group. But it's something that I wanted to bring attention to today because, fellow conspiracy realists, there are so many more groups like this in the U.S. and abroad than you might believe exist. There are cult deprogrammers who have tried to put this in the perspective of the larger context of modern new religious movements in the West. But the problem here is you can't really predict what's going to happen. The full-time followers are all over 18. They're legally adults. So you can't stop them from following this person that they believe is their mom. The leader phrases it in a very, it's not supposed to sound threatening. Let me just read the quote that she says in one of these videos. Let me know what you all think. She says, This 534th reincarnation is her, quote, quest to recover my beloved planet, the center of the universe, and the first planet I created. The planet is ascending, and you need to reconnect with the prime source creator, me.
Yeah, wow. She does say that. That's a quote they've even got on
Dr. Phil
on their website when you click on About Mom. So, like, this is her quote. Yeah. Oh, and did you read about the dark forces kidnapping my planet? Did you read that part?
We haven't read that part yet. So apparently Mother God has had it up to some metaphysical here with dark forces kidnapping her planet and her children. And that's what brought her to reincarnate in the flesh. Again, you know, your spiritual beliefs are your own. And I'm not a fan, definitely, of people telling you what to believe. So do as you will, as long as you're not hurting someone else. But the problem here is this situation looks pretty unsustainable. So at this point, the residents of Mount Shasta are worried. Some family members of people who have joined the movement are worried. And the things that people who have left the movement are saying absolutely do not match what is being presented on their official website or by their spokespeople.
I can't help but think of the Futurama villain, Carol Miller, who is the CEO of MomCore and is known as Mom. And I looked this character up because I was making sure I wasn't like totally making this up. But on the Wikipedia Villains Wiki, the quote that sets off the mom page on this wiki is, "Children, your old mother won't be around forever. And just once before I die, I'd like to be supreme overlord of Earth. So rebel, my little ones, and conquer the planet. Conquer Earth. You bastards. Let the bloodbath begin."
Oh man, no! I feel like I remember that. Maybe I'm not sure though. I'm gonna have to go back.
You don't remember Mom?
I don't know. I may not.
She has a weird like hairdo that kind of looks like Gary Oldman's Dracula in the Dracula movie people were sort of on the fence about. Mom, she's one of the big bads in the Futurama universe. Mm. But I think it's interesting that there's a cult leader going by Mom.
Wow. Okay. Well, I will definitely check that out. I will say one last thing here from Mother's quote. This feels weird to me. I think I understand what they're saying, maybe, but take it as you will. She's talking about that prime source creator, the thing that Ben mentioned. So she is that. But there's a sentence after it, and it says, "so that you can ignite your light bodies and can protect you again."
Okay.
I'm interested to know what that means, igniting your light bodies. I have a visceral reaction to it, Ben, almost like fire, but maybe that's not, just maybe that's that word, ignite.
It's a little vague.
It is vague, right?
Well, I bet if you pay your way up enough in the organization, you'll find out more.
So I would file this under keep an eye on it. I hope this does not become another Heaven's Gate, but of course, it is unfortunately difficult to tell all too often. If you are listening to this and you have experiences with what you later learned was a cult, we'd love to hear from you. 1-833-STD-WYTK, conspiracy at iHeartRadio. And if you or a loved one are struggling to extricate yourself from a movement like this, if you feel as bad for you psychologically, spiritually, or physically, please remember that there are resources available to help you leave these harmful organizations. If harmful to you, they are. I would recommend cult-escape.com. But as always, can't wait to hear your stories. Stay safe out there, folks. We're going to pause for a word from our sponsor, and we'll return with more strange news.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
All right, and we're back, and we've got another, it's sort of an update in an ongoing saga of a particularly popular and controversial app. It's particularly popular with the kids, but during COVID, I sound like a grandpapa when I say things like
the
that.
The kids and my wife.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's really
many other adults.
It started with the kids.
Influencers, creepy dudes.
That guy that reads the news, Noel, you know that guy that reads the news? He says, today, the weather people decided that weather was bad. Do you remember him?
I don't know this guy.
Okay, sorry.
I believe you. It started mainly with the kids. I know this because my kid was super into it back when it was called Musical.ly or music.ly. And then they rebranded, and then, you know, a little thing called COVID hit. And it took these, like, you know, dance reenactment, lip sync, comedy type videos to keep people from going insane. So you're right. Everybody joined the fray. And now TikTok, which is a Chinese owned company, the parent company ByteDance, is massive. It's ubiquitous. I think it has something in the neighborhood of like hundreds of millions of users, 800 million users worldwide. And apparently quite a chunk of that is in the UK. It is particularly popular in the UK with around 200 million users in the UK alone. And today's story is specifically about how some folks are not super happy about how TikTok is behaving towards children in terms of their privacy. We know that TikTok's gotten some flack. It even, like, you know, the Trump administration practically went to war with TikTok, potentially threatening a policy that would have outright banned them. Got kids interested in politics real quick. And that ultimately ended up not going anywhere. There was, I can't quite remember, you guys might know more than I'm recalling at the moment. How did they end up kind of mitigating that? I know there was a thing where they were going to get bought out by Microsoft as their US presence, but I don't think that exactly happened. And I kind of just remember that story fizzling. but they must have done something.
It's been difficult to find actual news about TikTok because there are so many clickbaity articles that are written about TikTok on
Number
an hourly basis.
Shock you.
Oh yeah.
But I just found one that it's all about the kind of the plans that TikTok had for an IPO, plans that they had with Oracle and Walmart and all of those, the sale and all that stuff with the kibosh that the Trump administration put on it. Apparently with the new administration under the Biden administration, they're holding that sale or whatever that transaction was going to be for security concerns. So they're still holding on to it and not allowing any movement forward right now.
For now.
Okay. Because, and just to, sorry not to derail, but that was as a direct result of these concerns over Chinese influence, of this app being in some way insidious and targeting our children and having some sort of direct line with this data that it's collecting. As we know, the apps are secondary. The product is actually data mining and data collecting, and TikTok is pretty egregious about their data collecting practices. There have been a few lawsuits already where they've been fined pretty large amounts of money, at least as far as, you know, mortals like we are concerned, but a drop in the bucket when you think of how many billions of dollars they made during COVID and how many users they have. But all of these stem from privacy concerns, that they are taking data from underage users. It does say you have to be 13 to sign up, but there is a claim in a $92 million settlement from as a class action suit that they were using underaged users' data in an irresponsible way, including biometric data, which is, you know, to get all those crazy filters, you got to scan faces, and all that stuff translates into, you know, metrics that can then be stored and used and paired with other data that they are mining. And they claim that they don't use it in any kind of nefarious way, but that's kind of up for debate, right?
Yeah, to walk back the because you, I think you asked a question earlier about Microsoft's bid.
I did.
Yeah, the Oracle.
What happened with that? Yeah,
Oracle was chosen back in September 2020 to be the technological partner for the U.S. For the U.S. endeavors, and TikTok is a huge deal here in the U.S. It's like Vine. You know, as far as its popularity level, I would say it surpassed Vine. You could argue any number of reasons for that. But I think the payout you're talking about, or the proposed settlement, came from, that's like 89 million TikTok users in the U.S. Is that correct?
Yeah. And then the funny thing is, it was actually halted. It's at a bit of a stalemate right now, because a judge argued that a $92 million class action settlement was just absolutely insulting to individual users, because they said if like even like 2% of potential class members responded, that would be something like $6 a piece, you know, for each one of these individuals, which is not enough to buy a Starbucks coffee, which was what the judge said in this case.
Wow, that's yeah. That wouldn't make sense.
That guy's getting the fancy coffee.
Well, isn't it interesting, though, because it sort of calls into question like the nature of lawsuits. Like, is it really like, I mean, a class action lawsuit is still something that sort of boggles my mind at times. So there's a lot to it. And you have to, you know, opt in. But it's like, is it about punishing the company, even if they are awarded like, you know, a free lunch? Is that really like making amends for being betrayed technologically? Like, it seems like a little bit of splitting hairs to me. Like, isn't it, you know, it should be about the largest amount of settlement for the infraction the company, you know, supposedly has made. And I don't see how a coffee versus, you know, a nice lunch is going to really make all that much of a difference meaningfully to individual users.
Yeah, well, it's great for the legal team. And then, I mean, they make a ton of money off of class action. And then if you consider class action for things that have health concerns or environmental regulations that have been violated, then a class action lawsuit is a very important piece of changing legislation, such that, you know, people can get their medical claims supported, right, in the case of widespread contamination, or that the company can get in more actionable trouble. I'm saying, like, I see what you're saying. Class action lawsuits like this, anybody who's involved, who ever been involved with one, or you get that letter in the mail where it's like, you might be eligible for a piece of this insert $1 million here settlement, that does usually translate to a very small takeaway amount for a lot of people, especially big things like when a bank has compromised millions of people or hundreds of thousands of people's data. It's not necessarily going to help repair the damage done to the end user. So the best thing you can say about a lot of class action suits is that it is paving the way for actionable consequences for those companies. But you're absolutely right. I don't think an extra cup of coffee is going to help someone if their personal data has been stolen.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think we're definitely on the same page. And I'm now getting to the new thing. I wanted to establish those precedents. Thank you, Ben, for clearing up that whole kerfuffle with the, you know, with the Trump administration, because it really was quite a big deal. It was a huge news item, and they really had to scramble to make that thing. And it really felt like a almost more like a symbolic gesture. Because it does seem as though there are still major concerns with the way TikTok is using user data. This new case comes from a woman named Anne Longfield, who used to have the role of Children's Commissioner for England, which is a role that we don't really have an analog for here exactly in the government. And what it essentially is someone whose job is to advocate for children's rights, which sounds great because, you know, I think maybe we sometimes don't think about children having as many rights as adults sometimes, which I guess in theory they don't. But there are things where this kind of conversation really matters, and this is one of them. She is advocating for there's no actual number on it yet, but a potential $1 billion lawsuit against TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, for what she refers to and she deems as shadowy, sinister, and if I may, you know, put some words in her mouth, she's really talking about what she considers something of an evil practice, or at the very least, completely duplicitous and dishonest. Her lawyers are alleging that TikTok has taken children's personal information that includes phone numbers, geolocation, geotags, you know, to know, to kind of like get a sense of their movements. Cause I mean, obviously you make these things at all kinds of places. You make them at stores, you make them at your friends' houses. You make, it really is a good way to tell exactly what, your movements are. Biometric data, like we talked about, videos, phone numbers, because it connects up to your, address book, you know, so you can send, you know, these things directly to folks. Or invites, or I'm not sure exactly. I don't have a TikTok account personally, but I could probably get all this info from my daughter. But alleges that these practices do not include sufficient warning, sufficient access to any kinds of terms of services, and that the most importantly, don't require consent from the parents of minors, which is, you know, what's at issue here. She has a statement saying the following: TikTok is a hugely popular social media platform that has helped children keep in touch with their friends during an incredibly difficult year. However, behind the fun songs, dance challenges, and lip sync trends lies something far more sinister. She calls the company a data collection service that is thinly veiled as a social network, but which is deliberately and successfully deceiving parents. So, you know, of course, ByteDance, the TikTok's parent company, had a understandably but patently diplomatic and kind of non-response, saying that privacy and safety are top priorities for TikTok, and we have robust policies, processes, and technologies in place to help protect all users, and our teenage users in particular. We believe the claims lack merit and intend to vigorously defend the action. So there it is, really. It's really just kind of an update. There are some other kind of precedents for this that are still being hung up in the Supreme Court. There's a case that Ms. Longfield in particular, or Longfield, who, you know, is kind of spearheading this, has been keeping a close eye on, and it is one brought by Richard Lloyd, who is the director of a child advocacy group called WICH, and it's behalf. Well, it's really not a privacy advocacy group, rather, but he filed a suit on behalf of 4 million iPhone users alleging that they were illegally tracked by Google. And that case was brought in 2017, but it still hasn't had a conclusion. And it is due to be heard by the Supreme Court relatively soon. So that's one to keep an eye on. And if that goes south, then this case doesn't have much merit. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Got it.
It's fascinating because, you know, there are multiple concerns here. Everybody who is a guardian or parent of a child who's listening in the audience today, you know, there are hard conversations to have with your kids about how public a kid should be. You know, many people listening today did not grow up in an age where their parents had, you know, a Facebook or some other profile on a platform where they could put pictures of you since infancy. You know what I mean? Like this, the boundaries of expectations for privacy have been, I would say, pretty much completely eroded. We've talked about it in the past, but when it comes to something like TikTok, we see, you know, the questions about who your children are interacting with online. And I don't mean to fearmonger, but these are really important questions. Like who is seeing them? What are they possibly learning about these other users? You know, how does the abyss stare back, right? How does the facial recognition come back to bite you in a few years' time? There are serious concerns. And it may sound, this is an important point. One of the reasons I really appreciate you bringing this to the show today, it seems on surface like it could be really racist, and somewhat nationalistic for people to start saying, oh, China is so bad. They're out to steal stuff about when your kids are at McDonald's or whatever. But the fact of the matter is that Chinese espionage in the world of tech is a very real and proven thing. So the previous administration definitely had a bad habit of trotting out China whenever they wanted to, A, get away from their own bad domestic press, or B, distract from another issue, make something not their fault, etc. But of course, these concerns are real.
They are real. And look, it's the kind of thing that would be really good fodder for like a science fiction story. Like we even talked about this in a previous either Strange News or I can't remember which segment it was. But the idea of what if there are like some kind of like subliminal messages encoded in TikTok videos or something. It's like it is the kind of thing you could take to the extreme, especially when you think about like how what a country like China would have to gain from having access to all these kids and access to all this data. And that's why I think the Oracle deal was so important, because we required sort of assurances that this stuff wasn't being just sold to third parties without anyone's knowledge or used for any kind of, you know, nefarious purposes. But you're right. It absolutely has the potential. And I'm joking about the subliminal messages, but I would love to see a short story with that in mind. I think it's a really fun idea. Not think that is happening.
Have you not seen some of the Swift talk? If you guys have never perused Swift talk, I highly recommend anyone out there listening and or watching on their phone right now, check out Swift talk. Get Swifty with it. Check out the hidden messages that can be found in all of Taylor Swift's music, social media posts, and or I don't know, messages that she sends throughout the universe without us even realizing in the moment.
Britney Spears and Taylor Swift are really just doing Darren Brown's act with some music, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's on another level, if you believe a lot of the most popular Swift talk folks. And it's really interesting stuff.
Wow, this is news to me. I do know that the Swifties are a very particular breed, and you definitely don't want to cross Taylor Swift with them around, because they'll come at
you. Yeah, I'm saying
you.
Do not ever do that, no matter who you are or where you are or what you're doing. Just know that it's fascinating and you can learn a lot about it.
Well, I'm going to dig right into that while we take a quick break for a word from our sponsor and then return for potentially some Swift talk, but definitely some more strange news.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
All right, welcome back for more strange news. Guys, there really is a person on TikTok, and I cannot think of his name. He is amazing. He just deadpan reads a news story and or tells you exactly what's happening. He does not look away. He tells you exactly what's occurring right now. The scientists will not allow the vaccine to occur. They will. It is one of the most wonderful things I've ever seen. But
is it better than David Lynch reading the weather? Doing the weather
yes,
report?
Okay. Yes, because okay. This guy just does it. He doesn't let up until he's finished telling you exactly what he's telling you, and then he's gone.
Wow.
I think his name is Chris, until the next actually. TikTok, he was in New York Times. I think so.
Awesome. Whoever it is, Diana showed me a couple of videos of him, and I loved it. Okay, but Chris is not here right now. We are, and that's why we're going to tell you about a little thing that's happening out in the United Kingdom and has to do with ye olde post office. We have discussed the post before on this show, generally regarding the United States when it comes to several of the major issues that our country's post has been dealing with. Well, today we're going to talk about the British Isles. And what's going on with their post office system. And particularly, we're going to be talking about a point of sale software, essentially. That's really what this story is about. The machines that are used to, you know, put a credit card in, make a payment, do some kind of transaction from a client, a user, just any person walking in to send something via the post, and the post office itself. We're going to the BBC to look at an article titled Post Office Scandal, What the Horizon Saga is All About. Remember that word horizon? It's going to be very important. Apparently, there were some bad things occurring at the post office, the post office being all of the post offices across the United Kingdom, between 2000 and 2014. So 14 years there. And spoiler alert, they continued after 2014 and are still happening right now. But we're going to get into that.
Right.
So for 14 years, there appeared to be some situations with balancing the books at specific post offices. So imagine just the post office that's down the street from wherever you are. Let's say if you're in London, your section of London or your neighborhood, that post office. Now imagine all of the transactions that are occurring over a quarterly, a monthly basis, maybe even a daily basis. All of that stuff is done through one of these computers, one of these terminals that's there, and all of that information, all that money in, money out, you get an end of the day number, essentially, how much the post office made or lost. And what was occurring at a ton of post offices around the UK is that those numbers were showing that the post office was losing money. And because of that, there were 736 what are called sub postmasters, which are just people that run a specific post office.
Which sounds way more like a position in a BDSM club than it is.
Sub postmaster.
Oh boy.
Oh wow. Like, so it's really low, it's like the base. Or wait, is a post like a physical post involved?
I mean, you know, we're not the experts.
Or is that
here.
Just euphemism?
This might be a different strange news or listener mail. Again, 1-833-STD-WYTK.
Okay. So 736 individuals, people who were running these post offices, were prosecuted because those numbers were different, right? And it seemed as though the individual post office was losing money, but it was just money that was gone. It wasn't as though they had spent more money than they were making. It's just money was not there that was supposed to be there. So it was assumed that these individual sub postmasters were stealing money somehow or embezzling money. And a lot of people, 736, ended up being prosecuted because of this. Many went to prison. They were convicted for false accounting. So it's not just as though they were accused of stealing the money, but they were accused of just doing a terrible job at accounting and for some reason misplaced that money.
I mean, gross negligence is a crime in and of itself.
Sure. And this is, you know, we're talking about the post office. These sub postmasters are kind of like franchisees, you know, running one individual version of this big system. And you can imagine that the post office itself is the thing, the entity that's prosecuting these people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's as though McDonald's was prosecuting franchisees who own the McDonald's somewhere in Atlanta. It's very similar to that.
For fry theft.
But here's the deal. Yes.
Huge gross crime. Huge problem.
Gross fry-gligence. Oh, God. Delicious fry-gligence. So here's the deal. For 14 years, they were prosecuting people, and there was a flag that was raised around 2015. And this flag had written on it, "Hey, I think there might be something wrong with the software that all of these sub-postmasters have been using to balance their books. I think it might not be the individual. I think it might be the software." And there was an inquiry, or at least there was a vote at some point in Parliament to take a look at this, to figure out what was happening. That vote, unfortunately, in 2015 got pushed, as in they kind of held off. It didn't go anywhere. And then for the next 5-6 years, there were just a whole bunch of attorneys, a whole bunch of individuals who were trying to clear the names of these 700 something people that all found themselves in the legal system there in the UK with felonies. There are horrible stories that you can read about what happened to individuals, some of whom were pregnant when they were accused of this stuff and ended up having, you know, to go to prison for a little while. Some people who lost their livelihoods, who then walked around with a felony charge on their record for 5-6 years, sometimes for longer, sometimes for a decade, or almost or up to 20 years, really. Horrible stories you can read. You can find those all over the place. The problem is, this software, which is known as Horizon, H-O-R-I-Z-O-N, it appears that this software, Horizon, was the culprit in many of the scenarios simply because it was not created correctly, at least according to some insiders with Fujitsu, the name of the, that's the company that created it. Some insiders who say it was built on top of a platform that wasn't supposed to do what this thing does.
So they retrofitted it, right? They tried to, like, they took the, for a terrible analogy, they took what would be the skeleton of a really cool whale, and they were like, how do we turn this into something that can run on the land?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. You can go to computerweekly.com and you can check out an article here called "Fujitsu Bosses Knew About Post Office Horizon IT Flaws," says Insider. If you jump to this article, you can see there are several people who were actually project leads for Fujitsu working on Horizon back in the early 2000s, or I guess it was late 90s, early 2000s, who were trying to raise alarms about how the software was being created and these massive problems that it had. The biggest thing, and it's difficult for me to explain, maybe it's something we could go to Jonathan with. It would be great to maybe have him come on the show and like walk us through some of this stuff. But there's a layer between the servers, the network servers that are actually processing all the numbers and everything. They're, you know, they live in a server room somewhere in a giant complex. And then on this side, you've got the individual point of sale service. So like the post offices, the individual post offices. And in a lot of ways, in a lot of systems like this, there's a direct connection. It's just like having an internet connection or something. Every time something occurs at the point of sale level, at the post office level, all that information gets transferred over to the main server, and that's where stuff gets logged. It gets logged on both sides, and then everything is backed up on that main server. That's where all the major information is kept. There was a huge issue where with this system, stuff would all end, it would all stay on the post office level. So locally, everything, all the information would get stored locally until some random point at night or when the service wasn't being used, you know, in a daily service mode. It would then transfer all of the information to the servers. And so it's almost like, do you guys remember having any kind of system like that? I'm trying to think of an equivalent, Ben and Noel, where there's just an update that occurs once a day or something.
Sure. Even like, you know, cameras that are offloaded at the end of the day or something like that. Like a scheduled event where things are either offloaded onto a server and then the local copies are wiped and then rinse and repeat.
Or in the old days of podcasting, actually, there would be some platforms and services that would just refresh something on a 24-hour clock. So you could maybe publish something like, you know, you're publishing your new episode of Ben's Crazy Backroads or some other show I just made up. And then
I love that podcast.
Thanks, guys. It doesn't matter if that publishes, if you publish it at like 10. It's still not going to really hit until 12:01 or something like that.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Funnily enough, I mean, even like huge companies like Apple, for example, like on their Apple Podcast platform, if you make a change as a user, you oftentimes have to ask for a manual refresh, which you can't do yourself. You have to request it. Otherwise, it takes 24 hours for when that refresh happens. You'd think with a big company like that, it would happen more regularly, but it's just like a one-time thing every day.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, so that was one of the major issues, and that created a lot of problems because sometimes some just the transfer would get a little corrupted if service was interrupted in between, right? So if you're in the middle of a large file transfer, if something occurred to the power, you may lose some data, and that was a big issue. And that's just one example of a problem that could come there. The other major problem is that with any software system like this, there should be essentially a dictionary of entries that are possible. So if you've got a point of sale and then you've got a server that's checking everything, you want to make sure that when you send stuff to the server understands what the heck you're talking about, what numbers you're crunching, what all of these things represent. So I'm going to go back to McDonald's really quickly. If you imagine the McDonald's menu just laid out, if you ever looked at one before, and now imagine that the person from whom you're ordering at the, let's say the to-go window or of the drive-thru, they've got essentially the same menu in front of them, only it's represented as a touch screen with buttons. So when you order something, I can enter in exactly what you're ordering and it's all represented. The machine understands exactly what it is. Everybody who's going to make your food for you, they understand what you're ordering. Everybody's speaking the same language.
This is a great comparison, by the way.
Oh, yes. So in this case, they didn't have that layer, that the dictionary of terms. So when one postmaster is entering in, you know, X number of stamps and there was postage with a certain weight that was sent out and all this stuff, they're putting in a single entry or multiple entries. There wasn't always a common common language that was being spoken there, to where the server, when you would have all of these entries for the end of the day, the server would only recognize 95% of them, 92% of them, 98% of them. The other, you know, 2 to 10% that it didn't understand, a lot of times it would just throw those entries out as though they didn't exist. It wasn't real. Those weren't actual numbers. So that money would literally disappear. It was just gone. No transactions occurred. Nobody gets billed. It's just done. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, if a transaction did occur and let's say money, Noel, came out of your bank account, but it never shows up on the books of the postmaster, the sub postmaster, that means you lost money somehow, but the post office never collects that money, I guess, or it gets a little weird there to know exactly what occurred on each sub postmaster's or under each sub postmaster's watch. And that's why everybody was being prosecuted individually. And it never seemed to be a massive problem with the software.
And you made a really great point, Matt, about the franchisee situation from the start and this McDonald's metaphor that you've carried on throughout this story. And I think it absolutely works. But I just want to point out again, when I hear the name Postmaster, what I think in my mind is Postmaster General, which is like a single position over a giant organization. There are hundreds of these Postmaster, and Postmistress, by the way, is actually another official name, which seems a little dated, but it definitely was in one of the articles in the BBC that I read. So it appears to be the official term they've used, but aren't a lot of these being walked back now, Matt? And many of them are being sent back to the courts because essentially, talking about jumping to conclusions, that's exactly what happened, as opposed to recognizing a pattern and realizing more quickly and efficiently that this is a problem inherent in the platform, not in a weirdly out of the blue rash of embezzlements, you know, throughout the system, right?
Yes. As of right now, this is a fairly positive story because many of these individuals' names are being cleared. I think as of 3 days ago, according to the BBC, there are 555 claimants that in December 2019 the post office agreed to settle with them. So there will be a lot of money going back to these individuals. I think, oh wow, it's £58 million in damage. That's what the post office has agreed to pay.
Overall,
yes. And the claimants individually are going to receive around £12 million of that. And that's 555 individuals. So you do the math there. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't mean those people get the parts of their lives back that were irreparably damaged from the time that they spent as, you know, someone charged with a major crime like theft in that way, basically theft from the government,
right?
Which is not, doesn't look good on an application. And there are further cases that are being looked at outside of those 555 people.
There's something that's so hilarious to me about this. It's funny amidst the very tragic thing, because as you said, Matt, these folks will never get that time back and you can't really put a price on it. But the thing that's funny to me is that, you know, at some point there was somebody tracking down these cases who believed there was a nationwide cabal of evil postmasters, sub-postmasters who were scheming on the government in a really weird, easily discernible way. And so this, I would say this damage to their reputations, damage to these individuals' reputations, isn't just one of like painting them as financial criminals. It's painting them as very incompetent criminals, when in fact it turns out that the Japanese company, which was one of the world's most admired companies, it won an award for it. It was actually their incompetence all along. So glad to see justice served. Glad they're getting better, better settlement terms than TikTok claimants. Mm-hmm. But it's still an unfortunate situation all around. And look, people who work at the post office work so insanely hard. You get a lot of bad press about them in the U.S. because for a very long time, aspects of this country's political structure have been trying to render the post office or have been trying to cripple it and render it extinct for a number of reasons. But don't believe the anti-post propaganda. You know what I mean? Be nice to your post office person next time you see him.
Yeah, totally.
Yes, yes. And I'm going to leave you with this. This is something that the BBC ended their article with. And it's just the fact that all of these people's lives were affected because of faulty software, or at least it appears that that is so. And the post office is settling for millions and millions of pounds with that as as the fact, essentially.
Matt, really quickly, did I miss what happened to the money? Did it ever come back? Was it never really gone in the first place? It was just a calculating error, or was there never actually any money that was disappeared?
As we were talking about earlier, it was money that disappeared off of the books, but individuals were still paid money. It just never made it to the post office. So there was missing money.
I thought I remembered that. I just wanted to make sure that was super clear. So now they're on the hook for real money.
Yes, yes. And it's because of this Horizon software. At least that's what's being alleged. That's what's being settled right now. And that's why there are a lot of other cases. There's this thing happening right now in the high courts in the UK where there are 2,500 other individuals.
Mm-hmm. 2,400.
Yeah, 2,400 people or more than that who are attempting to really settle another claim here. And the post office set up, I guess, a fund or, you know, a certain amount of money to then pay out some of those claims. But they are worried they're going to need a lot more. So they're going to seek help from the government itself.
Have you seen anything about the post office potentially suing the software company?
I have not seen that right now, because as of right now in the court, in the actual courts, the post office is not. Like, there's no individual who made a decision about the software at the post office who's being held to account. There's no individual or group of people at Fujitsu who developed the software being held to account. So I don't know. No news right now.
I was looking at this, too, because I think this news captured all of our attention. Also, I wanted to give a shout out to conspiracy realist Jake, who was the first person to write to us about this in a happy accident, Jake. We were reading a lot of the same things. Post office chief executive Nick Reed is actually one of the main voices who is calling on for compensation, which is, I think, speaks really highly to his character. But my other question is, and this is something we definitely need to put in the show here, guys, what is going to replace Horizon? So far, they've said they'll get to a cloud-based service of some sort at this point. But right now, as far as I know, correct me if I'm off here, Matt, as far as the day-to-day life of the sub-postmasters who have not yet gone down for post-fraud, they're still using Horizon, which means two things to me. First, it means there could be other false reports of crime. And then secondly, if there is some villainous, evil sub-postmaster, sub-postmistress out there, although I don't care for the gendering of the words there, if there is someone who is nefarious and unethical in this situation, now's the time, right? Like, now is kind of the time to go. You'll get away with it. Don't do it.
Now's the time to do it. Don't do it. All right. Well, I think we may have to revisit this again in the future just to give an update. But for right now, that is what's happening in the news in the UK with the postmaster, sub-postmaster generals.
This is a very UK-heavy episode today.
Hey, thank you so much for, Jake, for alerting us to that. But honestly, this was me... Yeah, just reading a bunch of stories trying to figure out what to talk about today. So, but thank you for alerting me. Maybe I thought about it subconsciously while I was looking at the news today.
I don't think so, Matt. The same thing happened to me because I love getting this kind of correspondence. So, Jake, I want you to know when I opened that email, I muttered, God damn it, to myself in the happiest way, because it meant that all of us are on the same page. So, Matt, I think this is something that was on all three of our minds, because this is one of those stories we each wanted to examine. Noel, you had said the same thing earlier.
Oh, I was just, I was actually researching this for my listener mail episode. It was definite parallel thinking. And then I went into our spreadsheet that we shared, and I saw it. I also uttered a God damn it. It wasn't quite as good natured as yours, Ben, but I'm glad we got it out there just the same. And, I was, prepared to discuss it. So very, very, very interesting story and one to follow for sure.
Well, sorry, not sorry. If you want to be like Jake, who wrote to us, you can do the same. You can find us all over the place on social media. On Facebook and Twitter, we are Conspiracy Stuff. And on Instagram, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show. On YouTube, we are Conspiracy Stuff. Whoa, look at that. You can see all the videos that we did way back in the day, all the way up until this week. Check it out. Like and subscribe, I guess, or turn on notifications. I don't know how it works now. You can watch our videos if you wish.
Are you pointing at the bottom of the screen right now when you say that, Matt?
Sure.
If you are not someone who likes to sip on the suds of social meds, never have a worry. You can always call us directly at our phone line. We are 1-833-STDWYTK, 3 minutes. Those minutes are yours. You'll hear a brief message, and then just pop in. Let us know what's on your mind. Would love to hear what you think of the post office shenanigans, what your opinion of privacy online and TikTok are, and of course, your experiences with things that may or may not be considered cults. If that 3 minutes doesn't work, have no fear. Please do not edit yourself. Please tell us the whole story. Don't omit anything. Give yourself a cool nickname too. We always love those. And send us a good old fashioned email where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax, Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper?
a woo-hoo-er, a hand clapper, a high-fiver. I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.